Good Friday, everyone. Welcome to the VolQuest.com mailbag podcast brought to you by Blue Water Climate Control. Be sure to check them out at bluewaterclimatecontrol.com or check them out on Twitter at blueh2o_climate with Austin Price and Rob Lewis. I'm Brent Hubbs. Glad to have you along with us. We'll jump right into the questions here because I think we all share some of the same questions, fans and media people alike. That's on our minds right now. So let's roll right into Vol lover's question. Assuming we play football this season, will the Vols wear any kind of patch, helmet sticker, etc., and member of Coach Majors? Are there any plans by the school to formally memorialize him? We'll get to that one in a second. Let's go to the second part of his question is for you, Rob. What's the plan to cover the loss of Pons if he does indeed leave for the NBA? Who could you see stepping into that void and being a complement to Fulkerson in the post? If Pons is gone, how much does that diminish the Tennessee's chances of having a special season?
I mean, there is no plan if you're talking about adding somebody to the roster. I mean, because of the way the draft has been pushed back, I mean, he doesn't have to decide at all. I mean, you know, with the new rules, you can go through the draft, and if you don't get picked, you can come back to school. Draft's not going to be until October. Tennessee's not going to be able to add anybody in October. So, that's a non-starter. And it's no guarantee he's going to be drafted. But he's in the mix. I mean, it's just going to be something Tennessee fans are going to have to wait on. Rick Barnes and his staff are going to have to wait on.
Does anybody fall in love with him? That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, it just takes one team. And I will say that if I think he – based off what I'm hearing, if he gets picked in the second round somewhere, I think he leaves. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but I think he will go. And I don't – because he's not going to be a first-round pick. You know, he's not going to suddenly turn into a 20-point game scorer this year and – you know, elevate his stock to the point where he's, you know, a first-round pick and guaranteed money. As far as what it does to Tennessee's chances for a special season, I mean, I think it's a real blow. I mean, he's the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, I don't think you're going to plug Olivier, you know, Kamwa into that role and not have a big drop-off. I don't think you're going to plug Corey Walker, who I think is going to be a really good player down the road, but you're not going to put Corey Walker in his spot and not have a big drop-off. So, yeah, I mean, if Eves isn't back, then, I mean, I think Tennessee will still be really good. I think they'll be a top 20 team. I think they'll make a tournament. But I don't think they're competing for the SEC championship, and I certainly don't think that they're, you know, pushing to be the first Final Four team this program's had.
All right, Rob. So how specific is the calendar right now in terms of, you know, because always you had the pre-draft workouts in Chicago where guys had a chance to – work out in front of all the teams to fall in love with, and then you have the draft there. What's the window here, I mean, looking like? I mean,
I don't think we're going to have any workouts. I mean, I just don't – unless something changes drastically. You know, right now the draft's in October. We're sitting here in the middle of July. I mean, we're talking about canceling all this, you know, everything. So, I mean, I don't think the NBA is going to be putting guys on planes and – flying them around to workouts. I mean, the NBA is getting ready to start playing their own kind of season in a bubble right in Orlando. So, I mean, you know, scouting and evaluating prospects is, I think, way in the rearview mirror. So, I mean, do maybe NBA scouts go to college campuses and watch these guys work? That's something I could maybe see happening. Like, they, you know, the scouts themselves travel and do workouts, you know, are allowed to work guys out on their own college campuses, which is not something that's happened before. But, you know, Tennessee's not going to be the only program in this situation. There's going to be a lot of guys that are in Eve's position, which is, you know, not a lock to go in the second round, but is on a lot of teams' radar. And it's going to be a bad deal for Tennessee if, you know, October rolls around and Eve gets picked 52nd by the Toronto Raptors or whoever, and he's out of here.
So you think there's going to be a good number of kids that are in like Eve's situation? They're all going to go to school in August, work out with their team, prepare like they're going to get ready for the season, and then if the season were to start on time, which is a huge if, then a month outside of the start of that season, you might not have that guy on your team. That's the window, right?
That's what I think. And woo. I mean, and excuse me, it also depends on if the agent you're working with is an NCAA certified guy, which Eve's is, and there's only a handful of those dudes. I mean, some guys, you know, probably are like, I'm out of here. If I don't get drafted, I'm going to Europe. I don't think Eves is in that situation. I mean, I don't think Eves is looking at it like that. I mean, I think if he doesn't get drafted, I don't think he's headed back to Europe. If that was what he was going to do, he would, you know, probably stayed over there.
And if he gets drafted, Eves Pons is just another great example that Rick Barnes can show to future recruits. If we took this guy, here's video clips from early in his career. Here's video clips from the defensive player of the year when he left. I mean, their ability to develop has been well documented and well proven, and he's a perfect example.
Yep.
And that's why I don't get the plastic haters. That's why I would not sleep on Euro's plastic, turn it into something.
Just give it some time. All right. So if you're Tennessee from the football standpoint, Austin, what do you do to honor Coach Majors this fall if there's football, or in the spring if there's football?
I probably do some type of decal or
patch, you know, just something on the uniform.
Or, you know, put a logo at the 45-yard line.
I think Jeremy should wear a coat and tie and that boss overcoat that Johnny wore against Notre Dame in 92.
That was not 92, but that was
a boss 91.
That was a boss overcoat for sure. I see Jeremy Pruitt, like, what's the guy in that really bad movie? What was the really bad football movie that had, like, Sinbad and Kathy Ireland and the guy from Quantum Leap?
Oh, Scott Bakula.
Yeah, what's the name of that movie?
What is the name of that?
Quantum Leap.
Necessary Roughness.
Unnecessary Roughness.
Yeah, remember when the coach is, like, filling in and he comes in and, like, he's wearing the shirt and tie and he rips it off at the half and loses his mind on his team? All right, that's a really obscure reference for bad movies.
Coming up later in the podcast, Tubbs will reference Matlock. He'll also reference Blossom and Saved by the Bell.
Hey, don't you hate on Matlock and Andy Griffith. Come on, AP.
No, we don't like Matlock here. As for plans to formally memorialize him, I mean, I don't see a statue. I don't see Tennessee doing anything like that other than something in the Hall of Fame for him. But, you know, you never know. But I don't envision them putting up a statue of him next to, you know, General Nealon or anything like that. I don't envision that being the case.
Again, his initials at the 45-yard line at the hash.
I like that. I like that. I do. I think that's pretty good. I heart balls. Old guy here reminiscing about Big Orange meltdowns after losing recruits such as Jared Jones from Walla Walla, Washington, and Jake Housewright, both of who turned out to be for naught. Any names come to mind for you guys that the program didn't sign but managed to survive?
How can you not mention Mark Packer putting Brandon Warren on TV locally just so he could pick Florida State? Packer, shout out if you're listening. Tone deaf.
I tell you what,
that's an all-timer, was it not?
Well,
Hubbard had a ringside seat for that one.
Yeah,
Hub set up there, and
yeah, that was a
endorsed it.
Yeah, that was not. I didn't endorse it. That one was not going to end well. We all knew. I knew it sitting at the table. I'd say another one was the Patrick Turner meltdown. When it turned
that was
Patrick,
pretty good.
Patrick was a pretty good player at Southern Cal, but not the five-star guy, and. Remember this story, Pat, and I was talking to somebody at Tennessee at the time, Patrick Turner, word leaked that he was committed to Southern Cal while Tennessee was in an in-home visit with him, and got word to the coach that was in the in-home that, hey, he's committed to Southern Cal, and they asked him, and he absolutely told them no, that he was not committed, but he was committed. He committed to Southern Cal and was trying to keep it quiet. And until after that Tennessee in-home visit. So Tennessee learned he was committed to Southern Cal sitting across the dinner table from him in an in-home visit.
What about Paul leading the horse to trough on T. Higgins, and then he picked Clemson? Paul.
I mean, T. Dig commit. I mean, he was committed to Tennessee at one point, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of other guys that were – that we're thinking. I mean, I just remember the Patrick Turner one was pretty significant. You had a couple of kids from Stone Mountain, Georgia that decommitted on signing day.
Went to LSU.
Did not necessarily pan out in a big-time way, but those were –
You know, I'm knocking on wood. I don't know if you can hear that. I'm knocking on wood here, but the Vols haven't had that, like, late flip against them long time.
Yeah, because everything is done so early now that you don't get up on signing day and have a lot of drama. I mean, Darnell Washington was trying to have drama, but everybody knew the answer to that one. It's hard to keep something a secret all the way to the finish line, which is what makes a guy like Smile Mundon interesting to me, because he's been able to keep everybody at bay right now, you know?
He's my favorite.
Everybody's total speculation with him because nobody truly knows. He's done a good job with that at this point.
Smith. I was going to say Harrison Smith was a pretty good one. It wasn't a Brandon Warren level.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that was a whole deal there that was about what position he was going to play, and there's all this talk about who was holding who hostage and what position.
Yeah, and I think once his dad wouldn't let Philip Fulmer come and do a home visit, you kind of saw the writing on the wall, so it probably wasn't as much drama there. But
and he turned out to be a better player than most people anticipated.
Oh, my God.
There was a lot of people like, yeah, he can't play safety at Notre Dame or whatever, and all he's doing is playing it in the National Football League. So,
he didn't really play it at Notre Dame. He played, but he now plays it in the NFL. Right. That's the best part of all.
At a pretty high level.
And he was I'll say this. I was one of those who did not see him being this type of player at all. And he certainly proved me wrong. He's a really good football player. Really good dude, by the way, as well.
He is a great guy.
He is a really good guy. Really good guy. After getting to know him, he comes back to Knoxville.
Before there was Cade, for me, there was Harrison Smith. Harrison Smith.
He was the original Uncle Austin guy?
He was. He was the original Uncle Austin client. He just didn't come to Tennessee.
All right, let's go to Deshaun 13. What do you guys think of Florida taking all these transfers and losing recruits every year to grades? Is that a sustainable formula for success? I haven't looked at it that closely. I'll say this. Anybody taking transfers for this season, I think, is in a high risk. You take a grad transfer guy, it's going to cost you an initial. What are you going to get out of it right now, given all the unknowns of what a football season is going to look like? Could be not a full season. Maybe you play in the spring. Who knows what happens there? I don't know that you get a return on your investment with a grad transfer right now, based on what it cost you. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how many of these guys in the transfer portal don't have a place to land when all is said and done. And we don't know when all is said and done is going to be. But as for Florida specifically, I mean, look, a lot of people think they're going to win the East, are right there with Georgia to win the East. So far it seems like it's been pretty sustainable for them and their coaching transition. So, only time will tell on that. Mavaw asked in the chat, they said, and did not get a response. We got a pretty good idea on the 2021 class of targets for O-line and D-line that the Vols are after. Given how critical the lines of scrimmages are to the success in the SEC, who are the 22 and 23 names that Tennessee is pursuing in both lines of scrimmage? To the extent that you guys know so far, who of these players have us higher on their list and are more likely for us to have a shot with in 22 and 23. Austin, I don't know a full list of defensive linemen in the classes of 22 and 23. I think you start with a kid from North Mississippi.
Walter Nolan, who's now at IMG.
He may be a top five player in the country at all positions, right?
Yeah, I mean, he could be the number one player in the country overall. I mean, that's the kind of player Walter Nolan is. He's got family that lives in Memphis. As I said a while back, Tennessee's going to, recruit him like he lives in Knoxville. I mean, that's how they view this kid. Jacob Hood's a big kid in the mid-state that they pushed back to 22. He's reclassified because he did kind of start school at a young age. So he's technically, really probably should be the 22 class anyways. There are, a couple of linemen in the state of Georgia that Will Friend's already after. The state of North Carolina is not
a kid at Whitehaven, lineman. Too, right? The lineman at Whitehaven?
Yeah, Alubaugh, someone Tennessee's evaluating. They like him. I'm not sure they're in love with him as much as, they're in love with, William Parker or they were in love with Dietrich Pennington from an in-state standpoint. Linemen are crucial, but at the same time, I think offensive linemen especially are more of a developmental position unless you got a top-end guy. Walter Nolan's a defensive lineman. Tennessee obviously would love to be in it with Travis Shaw, a big-time defensive lineman that we visited with out of the state of North Carolina. And then there are other guys. But there's a really good defense. I can't think of the name to escape. There's a really good defensive lineman in the state of Virginia as well.
Yeah, there is that kid in Virginia. I forgot about him. Virginia, by the way, is a really good-looking state for 22.
Yes.
A lot of good-looking players, a lot of really high-profile prospects. Probably the best year in the state of Virginia in 22 in a long, long time. Let's go to Volunteered 87. As an unbiased spectator, what's the best high school basketball game experience you personally had? It doesn't necessarily have to be a wild-ending buzzer beater, but more in terms of an intense rivalry. Felt like a high school game, maybe on steroids. Anybody seen a great high school? Rob, you've seen all these summer camp games. What were some of the?
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't see many actual high school games. I mean, I see all these kids play in the summertime. One of the best ones I ever saw was, I mean, years ago, was J.J. Redick against Raymond Felton at a tournament in Chapel Hill in North Carolina. Both of those guys were really, really balling.
I thought you were going to say Cott County versus Jeff County, 1987.
No, I don't remember that one. I do remember one where I was watching – this is an actual high school game that I was watching in Birmingham, which is Eric Bledsoe, and they had to call the game. I mean, not a great part of Birmingham. They had to call the game in the second half because a fight broke out in the stands and spilled out onto the court. Pretty intense. But actually, I do have one.
Did you see Carmelo and LeBron play?
I saw Carmelo and LeBron play a gajillion years ago at what used to be called the ABCD camp in New Jersey. And Carmelo was a year older. And everybody knew who LeBron was, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, he was a year younger, and Carmelo was, like, the top dog, like, in what was the rising senior class. And he and LeBron played, and I think LeBron scored maybe, like, 38 in the game and hit a buzzer beater, and his team won at the end. But I did see – this is an actual high school game. I saw I guess it was Melrose and whoever – Joe Jackson played for White Station, perhaps, I forget, in Memphis. And when Tennessee was recruiting Chris Jones, and Joe Jackson was a point guard that everybody thought was better. And Chris Jones tore him up and ended the first half like hit a three-quarter court buzzer beater before halftime. And his team dominated and they won that game. So there's a few off the top of my head. But again, I see a lot of get ball in summer. I don't see a lot of actual high school games.
All right, let's go to LF Ball here, Austin. Does Ty Simpson delaying a decision indicate any unresolved concerns about Tennessee? Are the Vols still well positioned there?
Yes, they're well positioned there. I think that more than anything, I don't know what they delayed it to, but the goal was to get through his junior season before he did anything. So he wasn't going to do anything before late November at the absolute earliest anyway. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, the kid's not started his junior year of high school. I mean, how is he delaying a decision?
Yeah, I mean, I think just because quarterbacks come off the board so early, a lot of people, were thinking that maybe – and I think he had given a quote somewhere along the way that, whenever he was ready, he would do it. But he's been pretty consistent, and his family's been pretty consistent, Austin, that they were not going to do anything until after this football season. I mean, that's been his pretty consistent message with you, right?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, talking to both he and his dad, they were going to get through his junior season and validate everything, from his game standpoint before they do anything.
Well, the other thing too is, I mean, like everybody in the country, he did not get the opportunity to go see some schools in the summer. And I think had there been an open travel and been able to get on the road, I think he and his dad would have gone and seen some places this summer, worked out at some more schools and kind of gone through the process, which could maybe have sped it up a little bit. I'm not saying it would have, but once he couldn't do anything this summer, it certainly put the end of the fall or end of this junior season season definitely on the table as what they were going to do. All right, UT Sportsman 16, outside of quarterback, who's the most important player for the Vols this season?
I'm going to go Henry To'oto because I think that if they lost him, it would be really, really damaging to the defensive side of the ball.
You don't think it's number two?
No, you said outside of quarterback.
I'm sorry.
I said outside of quarterback.
Oh, then I would agree.
And even if you include a quarterback, I think you could plug in somebody else and they could win games. I think if 11 goes out, they're just – you just don't know what you have behind that. Jeremy Banks hadn't played in a year. Kovaris Crouch has never played full-time inside backer yet. J.J. Peterson still seems to be behind the eight ball. So if you lose 11, to me, that would be massive. To me, you could plug in a Warren Burrell for an Alante Taylor. You could plug in any of those defensive linemen for each other. You could even plug in Jerome Carvin or a Trey Smith. And while the drop-off would be some, it would not to be the drop-off that I think if Henry got hurt.
I mean, he's clearly the best player on defense, is he not, as a sophomore?
Is
that an overstatement?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think that's – I mean, he's – no offense to Bryce Thompson and Alante Taylor. He's better than both those corners who have the most experience, and he's better than any other defensive lineman that they have coming up. I'll go this direction because I agree with both of you, but I think that is a given. I think if you look for somebody else, I'm going to say Kravaris Crouch, and the reason being is what Austin's saying.
I think because they need somebody besides Henry.
Well, and there's more unknowns behind. And I mean, Crouch has at least played and showed you some promise. Here's the other thing, too. You probably need Crouch to be a first and second down inside linebacker, and then he may have to come up and play off the edge on third down for you to try to help you generate some pass rush.
So I would put
Crouch in there.
I think Tennessee is going to play more of a 4-3 look this year than – they have in the last couple of years. I think they play less outside backers because they're not as deep and not as talented at that position.
I mean, and also, I mean, they're a nickel. I mean, so much now anyway. I mean, with that fifth, you know, the fifth guy, the star guy.
I just think Crouch has got to be – I mean, again, I'm going with Henry. I don't disagree with you on Henry at all. But I just think Crouch is going to have to help you in two spots. Because Henry's going to occupy the middle in third down pass situations because of his knowledge of the defense. And I think Crouch is going to be a guy who has to help you get off the edge for what you're saying in that 4-3 look or that 4-2-5 look to get to the quarterback because Tennessee's got some, you know, going to have a hard time getting to the quarterback. I like Kevon Bennett, but DeAndre Johnson's not proven anything. They don't have anybody else who's proven at that position as well. All right, let's go to Apple Orange here. UT Sports retired numbers. Who do you think should be the next Vol for Life, footballer and basketball worthy of having their numbers retired? And he actually has a good idea here. On a side note, should do something on the four Vols whose numbers are retired for their service and sacrifice in World War II. First of all, to retire numbers at the University of Tennessee, particularly on the football side, somebody's going to have to rewrite the criteria because
basketball's. I mean. Crazy hard too.
Yeah, I mean, and
I thought they did rewrite the criteria, Hubs, because Johnny Majors did not necessarily meet all that criteria when it got put in. That basically made it seem like Peyton would be the last person ever to get his number retired, barring someone coming along that had just a similar type career. I thought Dave Hart did help change that a few years ago, which is why Johnny's number got retired.
Well, I still think you have a lot of pro criteria in that. Some of it's been rewritten some, but I still think it's got too much pro influence in it for both sports. If you're going to go basketball, I think Chris Lofton would be the guy that you would discuss there.
And he doesn't qualify.
Right, and he doesn't qualify the way it's set right now. As for outside
Kevin
of that.
Kevin O'Neill, maybe?
No.
Kevin Nash.
Come on, Rob. Holy smokes. Let me throw some Butch Jones chum in the water for you there if you're going to go down that direction. Let's not talk about Kevin O'Neill.
What about Kevin Nash, though?
Kevin UC, Nash? Maybe. Yeah, why not? Why not Kevin Nash?
NWO Wolfpack.
In terms of football players, I don't know. I mean, who would be on the cusp that you would say they ought to – I know a lot of people were going to say Al Wilson, you know.
That's who I would say.
But – I just don't know that – I mean, I don't know that the criteria would ever be that case. I think to retire a number, to completely retire a number and never wear it again, it's got to be pretty significant. It's got to be pretty special. And I love Al, but I don't know
I don't
that
think they retired Johnny's there. Number, though, did they? Just no, retired his jersey.
Yeah, they just retired the jersey there, which, again, to retire the number, the pro criteria has got to be there's too much pro criteria involved in the number retirement at the college level for Tennessee, in my
there's opinion. Not on the basketball side. There's not pro. I'm looking at it right now, but it's you got to get three. You have to achieve three of these five things: either SEC Player of the Year, national, you know, a first team All American, a Player of the Year, like a Wooden Award candidate, have to be the career record holder in a significant category, you know, points, rebounds, something along those lines, and have won it or have won a national championship in your tier.
So Grant Williams, who's a player of the year in the conference twice, doesn't qualify, right?
Well, he was a first team All-American, and you're right, he will not qualify because
he doesn't have the third one, right?
He doesn't have a career, you know, record, doesn't have a national championship, and was not the national player of the year.
And that's where it gets so skewed, because I think you should celebrate your all-time great players. So, I mean, like, I get the retiring of the numbers should maybe be more hard, which would make it, you know, very minute, the numbers that would actually be retired. But I think retiring jerseys, what they did for Johnny and having them up in a ring of honor. I mean, like Jason Witten. I mean, like Jason Witten's going to be, you know, first or second ballot Hall of Famer.
Right.
In the NFL. Like, he to me should be right in the first line since he retired.
His jersey retired in Knoxville.
That's my
North Carolina, like the Dean Dome. I mean, they've got 20 jerseys hanging in the rafters.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point, Austin. I think that's something they can do a better job of, celebrating those guys without actually retiring their
number. And Al Wilson is a perfect candidate for retire a jersey, not the number. He goes into the Ring of Honor. Eric Berry, once his time is done, whenever that is, same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with that
for sure. All right. Vol Orange 11. When it comes to Tennessee football finishing this year out in recruiting, take over under on top five recruiting class. Second question, if Vegas had odds on JG being an all-SEC player, over and under, would he or would he not? All right, Austin, where do you think this class is going to finish? Let's just wait.
I think somewhere between 5 and 7. I think that there's naturally going to be a little bit of a tumble there just because they're almost full now. But, again, a lot of it depends on who they replace him with. Do they replace a three-star with Nylon Green? Do they place a three-star with Smile Mundon? Do they, you know, add, you know, some talented, offensive linemen along the way? Because I don't think they're getting Amarius Mims, but, you know, where do they, you know, stand with any of these other linemen? I think a lot of it depends on who you add down the stretch as to whether you can hold on for a top five class.
Yeah. All right. Time's getting away from us here. A couple quick things. We're just going to bounce around here. And jump into a couple of things. Rob, where's Tennessee with Kennedy Chandler? A lot of smoke been floating around that deal. Know you've been talking about him. Where's things at with him right now?
In fact, I've tried a couple times to get in touch with him in the last couple of weeks, but he's keeping things close to the vest after, you know, releasing his top five. And talking to people around the situation, I think Tennessee feels really good. I think Tennessee's the team to beat. You can't discount Duke and Coach K ever. In basketball recruiting. But, you know, right now I think Tennessee feels pretty good as we're sitting here in July. But, you know, long way to go, great player, some big-time schools recruiting him that you're going to have to fight off until the end. But sitting here on July 9th as we're taping this, I think Tennessee's a team to beat.
All right. And lastly here, Austin, I'm going to get his name right. He did not like me calling him Hamburg. It's Hammer Burr. Apparently, he's abbreviated it to Hammer Burr, so we'll get that right. So this is Hammer Burr's question. Recruiting opinions on Diego Pounds, Parker Mims, Orr, and Pennington, so the offensive lineman.
Tennessee still talks to Pennington. I still think that's an extreme long shot. I think Mims
got to come to campus to be a factor, right? Doesn't he have to come back at some point?
Yes. Mims, I think, is going to Georgia. Pounds, I don't think he's doing anything anytime soon. Tennessee's the best option for as far as proximity, considering he told us that he did not think he would stay in the state of North Carolina, but he did seem like he's one that likes the flashy object. So if he can go to maybe a flashier program than Tennessee, I think that he would potentially do so. William Parker, I think Tennessee is in a really good spot there. And then don't forget that they're also still talking to Jamarion Gooch, the kid that's committed to Auburn out of the King's Academy. I think that's one that, you know, it bears watching going forward.
What about
who are they fighting? Who are they fighting with for Parker?
For William Parker, you know, it's other SEC schools, but I mean, he's not doing a whole lot of recruiting. So I mean, like, you know, I don't think that, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, I think Tennessee's in a really good spot there. I think he's just waiting to do something first of September. Now that's what he was planning on doing right at the start of his high school football season. Let's see if there is a high school football season.
Yeah, and so obviously a college football season as well. Roderick Orr, Austin.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, I forgot to talk about him. Tennessee's done a really good job there. Jeremy Pruitt's got some ties. And, you know, I think, you know, Tennessee, I think, would love to add definitely to, I think, potentially three offensive linemen in this class. If you could go Parker or Gooch, I think that'd be a pretty good close to the class if you can flip Gooch.
All right. My last question, but because it's on there, we just some of the stuff we didn't get to and kind of bounced around a little bit. Where are you guys on a football season this fall?
I mean, I've said it before, just the money aspect of it. I mean, I don't know how they flush that. I mean, I don't know how, you know, ESPN, CBS, you know, ABC, whether there's fans in the stands or not, I have a hard time thinking that those people are going to sell commercials and show college football on Saturday. I know there's a lot of hurdles, you know, to get there, but in the end, I mean, the dollar signs to me make me think there's going to be a lot of people trying to make it happen.
Yeah, I think especially in this league, probably more of a commitment, you know, even if they just played conference games hubs, you know, maybe like two a month, every couple of weeks they play a game. I think that would, you know, be something that, you know, they're going to, you know, throw out different avenues, whether it be – and I think that, you know, they're going to kick the can as far down the road as they can get it, because we talked about this when we sat down and did that Zoom with, you know, me, you, Swin, and Packer. We talked about this in our podcast before and in the chat. Why not kick it all the way down the road until you can kick it no more? And then if you deem it to be too dangerous to play, then you just, at that point, you move it back to spring and you've got another 4 or 5 months to get it all figured out.
Yeah, I think the biggest question is, you know, from the college football business model financially, can college football play? And I know the TV money's there, but it's not like NFL TV money where we're talking, you know, $18, $19 billion. How much does the college football to balance out and pay bills in the athletic department, how much do you need to have full capacity stadiums? Because I don't think an NFL stadium is going to have more than 20,000 fans in it. I think you're looking at 15 to 20,000 fans. So at Neyland Stadium, if you take 75,000 fans out of the stadium at $100 a ticket, that's a lot of revenue lost there. And can you, even with the is that enough with TV money and limited number of fans in the stands to handle all your businesses? I don't know that. I will say this as we close it out, the NFL saying on as we tape this, teams are going to be forbidden from post-game interactions within 6 feet of each other. You cannot do jersey swaps anymore in the NFL. Some people are really happy with that move, by the way. Media will not be allowed in the locker room, and teams must travel to the stadium via a bus. I guess there's no individual travel into the stadium, whatever that means. And there's no on-field fan seating. I guess that's in Jerry's world where they have some on-field fan seating, but nobody's going to be close to the field there with the NFL. So the NFL is starting to lay some parameters out there. We saw the Ravens talking about their seating capacity as well. So all those questions are coming about. We'll see where college football is in another week as they continue to ride it out and kick the can down the road a little further, as Austin mentioned, that they will continue to do that. That's going to do it for this edition of the VolQuest.com Mailbag Podcast. Hey, in East Tennessee, you need a reliable heating and air system designed for your home and our climate. You need a team that's trained and held to the highest standards. You need a local company like Blue Water Climate Control. Our friends there, veteran-owned, family-operated, they're going to take care of you for whatever you need. They're going to send out an expert, not a salesperson. If you need a new system or a major repair, they're going to take care of it the right way for you. And they're going to tell you exactly what you need. You may not need a new system. You may just need a repair there. They're going to give you exactly what you need to make your system work to the best of its ability for you, giving you the comfort that you need, the indoor air quality you need, and the energy efficiency you need. They've got options for financing, which includes same as cash, even rent to own. Give them a call today at 865-299-2290 or visit them at bluewaterclimatecontrol.com to make an appointment. Blue Water is an authorized dealer for American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. For Rob Lewis and Austin Price, I'm Brent Hubbs. That's going to do it. Have a great weekend, everybody.